Hubbub, a chaotic din caused by a crowd of people.
Hello and welcome to Season 5, Episode 6 of the Director's Hub podcast. I'm Faye Miller from Gingerbread World, and co-hosting with me is Bruce Bignall from Evolve Pipe Drive.
Hello.
And today we are talking to Kay Shane from 1HR. Hi, Kay.
Hi there.
How are you doing?
I'm really well, thank you. And thank you for this opportunity.
Well, it's really good to have you on board and to chat a bit about what you do. So tell us a bit about 1HR and exactly what you do.
Yeah, sure. Let me tell you a bit about how I got into it, I suppose. So I was really lucky when I left university. Let me go back one step further and say I did a degree about it, and it had communications information systems. So my children will laugh at the fact that I did programming at university, actually. But I went to a lecture in my second year which detailed what HR was. And I literally went to this lecture and I was like, that is what I'm going to do. Because even from a really junior level, you get to know all the gossip that goes on in the, in the organisation. So I was like, yep, that's what I'm going to do. And I kind of started out in blue chip organisations. I started out in retail, did that for 3 years, did management, yeah, which was a really good foundation for me. And then I went to GE as an HR person, and I kind of grew my career, and then I went to Smith Kline Beecham. So just all really large blue chip organisations until I moved to Brighton from London, obviously. And I was finding that when I had my first child, I was working with Novartis at the time, I was dropping him off and picking him up. I was the first one there and the last one to pick him up, which was fine until he went to school. Bless him, he was like, he's August born. So he was literally 2 weeks past his fourth birthday when he went to school. And in those days, you couldn't stay for the whole day. So he had to like go for 2 hours. Now I could have got a nanny, or I could have done this, that, and the other, but I kind of thought, well, I've got two kids, may as well bring them up. So I had 6 years where I was a stay-at-home mum, and then when I wanted to go back to work, there's none of this hybrid malarkey where you could more fractional, like, HRDs or anything. So I couldn't get a job. No one would give me a job because I was too senior to take part-time positions. Yeah.
And what year is this?
So I, my son was born in 2002. So I stopped with Novartis 2006, and I started 1HR in 2012. And I kind of just like, I was thinking to myself, well, you know, there's got to be small organisations that can't afford to have a full time HR person, but need HR support. So that's where I'm going to pitch myself. And it was a real, you know, I'd been really lucky, actually, going through all that corporate. I went through corporate training. I worked with some fantastic people. I'd managed to, you know, build my career to quite a senior level. So, you know, I was involved in quite strategic projects and all of that kind of stuff. So when I started my own company, I was like, you know, I'm just going to take that corporate best practice and I'm going to put it onto little companies. And I think it was my biggest learning curve was that, you know, working for small companies, micro organizations and SMEs, I mean, I just loved it. I loved it from the beginning. You know, just being able to, once I understood what was important to them, however, you can take that best practice. You just have to be able to be creative in those HR processes. You know what works well. You just have to be able to be a bit more creative to do it on a much less budget. You have to be really careful about what you say because, you know, you're the only one. So you can't, you know, you can't be flippant with your comments because people listen to everything you say. You're the expert, right? And that took me a little while to kind of work out. But yeah, that was my journey to creating OneHR.
So tell us a bit more about what OneHR actually does, because you help with you know, small businesses to sort of manage HR things, but also recruitment as well. That's a big part of it, as I understand
Yeah. So at OneHR, well, as I say, so I kind of evolved, right? So I think the main thing for me was really understanding my clients, really getting to understand what was important to to really small clients. And, you know, what there was kind of a sequence of things that needed to happen to ensure that they were kind of, you know, making the most out of their, what is the most expensive resource they have, which is your humans, right? You know, your wage bill is one of the biggest bills that SMEs, you know, people have. So, you know, you've got to make the most out of it and you've got to get your return on investment. So I think really understanding how what was important to SMEs, really understanding, you know, how I suppose understanding what was going to make the most impact to their bottom line. Yeah. And over the years, so people come to you, people come to HR consultants because they've got a crisis generally, right? So we've got this person who's done this, or you know, we've got this situation that we have no idea how to work out, otherwise it's going to cost us a fortune and we're going to be going to tribunals. All right, so over the years, what I've learned the hard way, I would suggest, is that proactive HR is much more cost-effective, much more useful as an organisation for them and the people that work in it. And I've learned that from working in a reactive way, or smaller organisations just working in a more reactive way. And by that, what I mean is, if you have an HR plan, you know, it's just a plan, right? So you speak with the founder and you say, what do you want to do in the next 12 months, right? And they talk to you about it. That's their strategy, right? And you go, okay, so what do we need from a people perspective to be able to achieve so that you can achieve that, you know, that plan, right? And then you put in, you know, you put in your marketing plans, you put in your budget, and that's the same, exactly the same for people plans. And once you've done that people plan, when you've done a little bit of planning, then you know what you're doing. You know what the budget is for your recruitment. You know what the budget is for your training. You know that people need to have, you know, you need to talk to them from time to time about how they're doing, so they can have feedback, and that's one-to-ones, right? So you know that there's certain set pieces that kind of happen throughout the year for as a kind of people plan. And that all that is proactive HR. So you're just planning a little bit, so you know what's coming. So it means that you can, you know, identify your best talent, have a look at your organisation and see what succession you need. So if you've got big holes, are you going to grow someone from internal? Have you got a budget to bring from external? You know, and coming back to your recruitment question, I mean, I was just doing a webinar this morning, and the cost of hiring, the cost of, you know, employing people has gone up exponentially, right? So having proactive HR, which basically means being strategic in how and who you recruit, making sure that when they're on board, you onboard them properly in their induction process so they've got the best chance of sticking, they've got the best chance with that cultural aspect, and then, you know, training and developing them into their role.
What does that look like for a small business? Because I can imagine, you know, from the large businesses, there's an in-house person or team that sits at all this and they can think about this. If you're going to, your sales strategy, your business plan, your marketing plan, there's a HR plan. How much resource or time should they be? Is it something you set and then check in with? And would they check in themselves? So just making sure the HR has a hat at the party, you know, when they're talking about the business decisions, or would they lean on someone like yourself monthly, quarterly? Like, how what does that work or mean for a small business?
Okay, that's a really good question. So, and over the years, I think I've kind of like delved into that in different ways. So At One HR, what we offer is a full HR department. So there's me at a strategic level. I've got an absolutely fantastic HR manager, or HRBP, who is fantastic, superb at implementation. And we've just brought on board a really fantastic HR assistant who is like frontline for staff, really, you know, her accuracy for all of the KPIs and reporting and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, that's really helpful. So it's like having an entire HR department, and, you know, that depends on how much you want to use that for different businesses. So, you know, if you've got 20 to 80 people, you probably want to have that on a some sort of retained basis. So you've got weekly things that you're actually doing. So there's someone at all levels. Yeah. So there's someone to do your admin, there's someone to do your implementations if you've got, you know, sickness absence, or if you're doing restructures, mm-hmm. and there's someone on hand to work in a different way with the organization's leaders to make sure that your strategy is progressing in the right way.
I suppose it's really important because there's that oft-quoted figure of it's like five times more to recruit someone than it is to retain them. And that, so like getting that recruitment process right from the off rather than being, as you say, reactive when something doesn't go right is crucial if you actually, it's more cost-effective in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of recruitment, definitely. Recruitment's very expensive, but recruitment's expensive because it's not just the cost to recruit, it's the cost to train and develop, it's the time resource of what managers have got. So, you know, if you, it's not just like what you pay for, you know, the actual physical cost of doing it, it's just so time consuming for everyone, for the people that they work with, for, you know, people that manage them. So,
so there's sort of a gap between, and maybe this is more of a problem for small businesses than larger ones, but where you recruit someone, and I've heard stories of people saying this, oh, they recruited me and they promised all this, but then I was just dumped at my desk and left to get on with it.
Yeah.
And I mean, how do you think small businesses can approach that in a better way so that people sort of are recruiting, they've got that active onboarding process, even if it is a small business?
I think that... I'm a bit evangelical about this, actually. So proactive HR, there's what I've talked about is planning, right? But it's also engaging. It's engaging your staff. And to be honest with you, people work for people, right? So if you invest in your managers to ensure that your managers have the right training, the right competencies, right? So when you bring somebody in, they wouldn't be left at their desk because the manager would know how to integrate them into their team. They would also know how the other parts of those teams are motivated. And the reason that you people don't recruit for no reason. They recruit because you need extra resource. So you need to plan for that. You know, you need to plan for how you're going to train that person up. You can't just bring them in and expect them to know, not just like the work, because you can bring someone in and they'll have all of that expertise, but you need to be inducted into the culture. How do you work around here? What do we do? How do things happen? And that's a learning curve. So you need, like, you know, people utilize buddy systems or mentoring, or, you know, be super clear in the recruitment process what you're coming into, and then both parties can choose. But having competent and trained managers in, you know, those basic practical management skills of active listening, giving really good feedback, understanding what motivates others, understanding what the concept of situational management is, all of those different things are really helpful to for staff engagement and retention.
Yeah, because that can make a huge difference of the success or failure of hiring someone, can't it?
You
know, if they feel like they're supported in a new role, because it does take time, no matter how qualified you are. As you say, you don't know the company culture and the inner workings of the company. It's going to take time to get up to speed with that. If you're not supported, I'm sure it's easy. Yeah, that's when it's all too easy for people to go, stuff this, I don't like working here, and you know, off I go again.
Absolutely. I mean, I was talking recently, in fact, I was just talking upstairs. it's really interesting. I find it super interesting at the moment, right? Because there is, there's like four or five generations that are working with each other, right? Yeah. Now, I'm Gen X, right? And I know that when millennials came, like, there was, it was tricky for the Gen Xs to manage the millennials because they were completely, like, different values, different culture, and, like, a different attitude. Yeah. And now I find it really interesting that the millennials are now managing the Gen Xs, right? And the millennials are finding them really entitled and, like, you know, they're bouncing off it. So I read a report recently where, like, 80% of Gen Zs are bouncing off their first role, and it's not because of their work ethic, it's because they're unable to communicate effectively with you know, their managers, and also so it's communication and perception of what they need to do, so you know, which I think is really interesting. I think that
you think that's on the manager or on the individual?
Bit of both, right? But to be honest with you, it is on the manager, because what I'm trying to get to is there's really positive things on all sides, right? But you have to be able to see the positive in it instead of the negative. Yeah. So with the Gen Zs, you know, they're very boundaried, so their work-life balance, you know. Whereas, you know, Gen X is work. Yeah, right. So obviously, you know, it's better to have those boundaries. However, and, you know, Gen Z, they really like the purpose-led kind of work. So projects that they can, you know, can believe in, and, you know, those kind of things. Also, that's really helpful. It depends as well. So, like, the millennials, they loved feedback. Really clear feedback and like what they wanted to do. So they love a one to one. Whereas actually the Gen Zs, they like much more bite sized feedback. Right. So I mean, it's a generalization what I'm trying to say, but this is what come out of it. So, and I think that has led to, just finishing my point on management. Management is about understanding the task that you're trying to do for your organization and working out ways and strategies of being able to achieve that, right? So motivating people in the way that they need to be motivated, or taking the time to understand that and being able to turn it around, that's what makes a great manager. And yes, training does help with that, but there's an understanding that there's different ways of managing in different different circumstances, and also taking a deep breath and just not getting massively frustrated with the whole thing. But also that needs that kind of, and doing really good expectation setting, right? But also there's an obligation on people coming into the workplace to, you know, understand the culture which they're going into and making a decision to go, is this the kind of culture for me? And so having that cultural reference in that recruitment process is really, really important. How often do you go into, you know, interviews where it's just skills? They're just talking about skills, right? Skills can always be taught. Attitudes and behaviours are much more difficult to, you know, to shift.
How has that changed with hybrid environments, right? So as someone that's trying to build a business now, like, had 11 staff at one point, we've now got 3, as a choice. But one of the hardest, how do you make someone that's working remotely feel like they're part of the team?
Okay.
So you used a couple of examples there of walking in and getting a feel, you know, when we use these analogies of manager and employee relationship, that used to be maybe a leadership role, but it's really hard to do that. Well, how do you do that in a hybrid environment?
Well, I hear this question a lot, actually, and I mean, my team are remote, so, you know, we get together maybe twice a year, and the rest of the time we talk all the time. I mean, the my staff, sick of hearing my voice, to be perfectly honest. Can you do this? So it's good communication. It's having, it's understanding, everybody understanding what's expected of them, understanding what the workload is, understanding what your objectives are, and utilizing all of those, you know, those management techniques, right? And actually, you know, just going back to the generations just for a second, like millennials, they quite like being on site, with Gen Zs, can't see the point of it. Can't see the point of it. I can do more at home. I can do what I like. I can do this. Whereas, you know, so it is kind of values based. But I mean, I think since the pandemic, I mean, because that's where it all came from, right? Let's be fair, right? And, you know, founders that I worked with were very anti remote working prior to the pandemic, right? And then we all had to get used to it. I mean, who knew that you could do, like, sensitive HR things on Teams, right? And, you know, I'm a CMC accredited mediator, right? Actually, it's better on Teams because people are in their own space. You know, people feel comfortable. You haven't got to go into a, you know, alien environment, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, managing people remotely, you know, there's pros and cons with remote working. You know, at the end of the day, it takes a certain personality to be isolated. You know, it is quite isolating. And, you know, having hybrid working, I think, you know, is very effective because you get the benefits of having that, you know, time where you're not constantly interrupted, but being on site and is really good for collaboration, it's really good for team spirit, it's, you know, that's really good for all of those kind of things. But it does enable you to get talent from anywhere. So, you know, actually my team live relatively local, not in Brighton, but, you know, in Littlehampton and in Vinden. But I could have employed somebody from Newcastle, wouldn't have made any difference. I mean, apart from my Christmas do, probably.
We'll get on the bus up to Newcastle.
Yeah, there you go.
What's something that people don't know that HR looks after? Is there something that when you speak to a small business and they're like, actually, oh, bloody hell, I didn't know we need to, that is part of HR. Is there anything that...
Yeah, I suppose so. So I suppose that, you know, if I say, oh, sorry, dude. When I say to people, they say, oh, what do you do? I'm an HR consultant. They're like, oh, yeah, you hire and fire people, right? And do you know what? Yes, I do hire and fire people. Well, I don't anymore. But that is part of HR, but it's like the smallest part. What HR is really good at is company culture, staff engagement, staff retention, you know, really learning the lessons, right? So at the end of the day, good two-way communication between, you know, the leadership and the people that do the work can only make that better. It can only to bring ideas, so it's good for business, right? It's good for your bottom line. It's good for, you know, people wanting to go to work, so retaining your staff and being creative in the ways that you're able to do that and being collaborative in the ways that you're able to do that, you know, means a happy workforce is a productive workforce because you're getting that discretionary effort, and that's what everyone's looking for, right? So, you know, we all know about quiet quitting. We all know that, you know, you're still paying the same amount of money for those people to either come to your workplace or to, you know, be online and be remote, but you're still paying the same amount of money, but you're getting no productivity out of it, right? So, you know, what HR brings to the party is getting the best out of your people. So that's not hiring and firing. That's about developing, it's about communication, it's about engagement, And it, you know, it's about being proactive. I mean, on the flip side of that, what I would say to you is, if there is a dispute, so if there is, you know, a disagreement between, because of a value difference, like what we were talking about just now, you know, offering that kind of workplace mediation aspect means that you can do it in quite a cost-effective way, and it's quick. So if you've got a disagreement, what's the first thing you think about? It's like disciplinary or grievance, right? So once you enter into that formal process, both of those parties lose control, because then you're just in a formal process. Whereas if you you can use like workplace mediation, those two people retain the control over it. It's generally done in one day. There's a particular process that you follow. And they, through that process, it's a really robust process. Through that process, both people get to get to articulate exactly what they want and make an agreement between them that is entirely confidential, that the business doesn't get to know about. Nobody else gets to know about. It's entirely up to them, right? And then, and that's their agreement, and that's what they live by. So a mediator speaks to them individually about what they're looking for, and then is able to bring them together, and they're able to talk together about what they actually want out of the situation. That's much more cost effective than going through a formal process, right? It's quicker, it's less stress on everyone concerned, and more importantly than anything else, it means that the relationship between those people is strengthened going forward, right? So, I mean, they might not be the best of friends after it, but at least they can work together.
That's a far better process, as you say, than going down that disciplinary route. But I guess, as you say, that's kind of what people think straight away, isn't it? So,
yeah.
So I suppose that's down to education. And one other thing I wanted to sort of touch upon, I know we've talked about it before, you've talked about it before, is the impact of AI on recruitment, and is that having an impact on the recruitment process, do you find? Do you think it's going to become more and more prevalent in it?
Yeah, I mean, so let's look to the future, right? Not even too distant future. I think that there's not just AI and automation in general, but, you know, there's a lot of things in HR on the horizon, right? So, you know, we just had the budget. We know that NI is increasing. We know that the minimum wage is increasing. We know that, you know, for tiny organisations, there's going to be a bit of relief. But actually, once you've gone over a certain amount of turnover, like, it's not really. So, you know, the cost of recruitment is massive. Yeah. So let's, and then coupled with some of the employment rights bill that's coming in.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing.
Yeah, it? So, I mean, that's not coming in until, I think they, you know, in a way, you know, I think they've been really canny in the way that they've done it. So, you know, with the budget, they trailed it. So by the time it came yesterday, you know, people were like, oh, actually it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's been commended by the, you know, the Bank of England, or, you know, the markets have taken it well, all of that kind of stuff. Now, with the employment rights bill, some of it is coming, but not loads. All of the meaty stuff is still is going to be in 2026. So, you know, it gives the you know, the unions, it gives the FSB, it gives the CIPD time to kind of discuss these things, so everyone feels included, everyone feels that they've had their voice. And so these are the different things that are coming in HR. These are the different things that are going to make a massive difference. AI, just going back to the question, I think will be immense. I think that, I mean, I'm getting trained. I'm going on some training next week. I'm taking one of my team with me, because I think that there is a curve. I think we're all in it now. AI has been with us for a year, and look at the difference. Right, it's been 1 year. So you either learn how to be part of it, or you're kind of excluded from it. Yeah. So not just recruitment, but recruitment, training. Yeah. I think understanding what potential it has for your organisation and for your clients is an absolute must.
I guess it has potential to offset some of those, as you say, the cost of recruitment is going up, and it's like, you know, it's going to cost more to, you know, with the national insurance rise and so on. And the sick pay thing, that's the other thing I want to bring in, is it sick pay from day one as well, yeah, and all that. So would AI, I guess, could offset some of that by automating some stuff and streamlining some stuff? Would it offset some of the costs
recruitment? You know, at the end of the day, are organisations going to think to themselves, cost of recruitment is too much, I'm just going to automate some of those things, so I'm not going to recruit as many people, right? But again, let's see what happens, because that SSP thing... Yes, they are saying it from, you know, yeah, but they're also saying that, you know, unfair dismissal, everything's from day one. Let's see. I don't think that that's going to be the case.
You don't think it will be from day one?
I don't think it will. By the time we get to, you know, October 2026, let's see what has come through with, all of the negotiations that the government has had to have.
Other things that they're bringing in, because there was the potential statutory sick pay, there was they want to get rid of the 0 hours contracts, that's the other one, isn't it?
Well, in terms of 0 hour contracts, there's just a few more protections.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people like 0 hour contracts, and, you know, it's a necessary part of it. I mean, I remember, oh my God, like when I was in, like, I mean, God, was it university or afterwards? There's a guy called Empty Raincoat, Handy, right? And he talked about a gig economy, and that was like back in like the 90s or whatever, right? And here it is, here we are. This is the gig economy. So, you know, there has to be 0 hour contracts, but I think there needs to be more protections, right? And it's about consent. You know, we're going into an era of consent, right? So if you want to have a 0 hour contract, then that's fine, and it just tell us. But also, there's kind of like what they're saying is that they've got if you work 16 hours a week on your 0 hour contract, then just say you've got 16 hours a week. You know, if you've worked for the last year on 16 hours a week, then just have a 16 hour a week contract. Yeah, you know,
that's actually makes it sound way more straightforward than it's been blown up to be, I guess, isn't it?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, like I say, these things will come in, but we've got this period of consultation, and there's a lot of, I suppose, there's quite a lot of fear at the moment, and, you know, in this budget has been, you know, it's the biggest, like, anticipated budget, I think, for 15 years, and I think it will be, you know, it will kind of go down in the history books. They're definitely shifting the focus, but now let's see what actually happens. Let's be curious about what is involved in it. Let's see how technology evolves throughout this kind of process, and see where we go from there, really.
Yeah, because I don't think it, I mean, obviously we're still digesting the budget and everything at the moment,
absolutely.
But, like, for example, the rise in the minimum wage and that, I think that's a good thing, because it is...
Well, I mean, I do think it's a good thing, but the thing with it is that there might be unintended consequences.
Yes,
because what they're trying to do is, you know, is bring up the 18-year-old's rate to harmonise, so it's all kind of on one, right, instead of having the four different rates. But the thing with it is that if you could employ an 18-year-old just out of school, right, never worked before, or you can employ a 23-year-old who's been working for 3 years on a minimum wage, who would you choose, right? Mm. So, you know, I fear for apprentices. I think it's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
But I think that as part of an unintended consequence, it might be even more difficult for young people to secure work. And I think if you couple it with the rise in employment, right, and you've got to get it right first time, especially with small businesses, you haven't got the money to keep recruiting and recruiting again, and you put that as well with the Gen Zs that everyone's saying is so entitled, I think those kind of, you know, it's going to start shifting. You know, if you've got a 23-year-old, how many 23-year-olds do you know now that have got their own place or even had shared spaces? So, you know, they're all at home, They're all with you know, bank with mum and dad. So again, it's, you know, it's kind of, I do think it's a good thing from a kind of philosophical point of view. But I wonder what those unintended consequences will be.
Are there plans to, as you say, to harmonise? Because there's different rates, aren't there? If they're like 18 and 21 or whatever.
Yeah, so they're bringing it up.
So it'll all be the same, will it?
Well, it hasn't, like, at the moment, but I think the 18-year-olds have got 16% increase up to £10, and the higher rate has gone up to £12 something from £11.40 something.
Yeah,
I'm going to the top of my head. So I think there's been a 6% rise for the top rate and a 16% rise for the bottom rate. So over the next couple of years, they'll harmonise it.
Okay. Yeah, because I mean, my daughter moaned about that because she's like, just because I'm 18, only 18, doesn't mean that the bus is any cheaper for me than someone who's 20, you know, to get to work or anything.
So. I understand. But I mean, I suppose, you know, you think, what are your outgoings?
Yeah, which is nothing.
She lives at home and you cook and clean for her.
Yeah, as an aside, she came back from holiday, which she did pay for, but she came back, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm back home and I don't have to pay for anything anymore myself.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, got a lot to learn.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, we are unfortunately coming to the end of the podcast, believe it or not. It's been really interesting chatting to you about 1HR and what you do.
Thank you.
What does the future hold for you, do you think?
Well, I mean, the future looks bright at the moment. I mean, we're really busy, but we have, you know, so we've specialised in that proactive HR for a long time, for you know, for the whole time that I've been doing it. But management training, I think, is becoming more and more important, and that's something that you know, we offer now as a kind of separate thing. And that workplace mediation. So I think for us, it's diversifying and really making sure that we are, you know, kind of at least on the curve, if not ahead of the curve, with taking in new technologies like AI and
so
also systems. Yeah, exactly. And systems, just like, you know, getting our data, making sure that we know what we're talking about so that we can tell our clients about what they need to know. You know, we did something recently, you know, the sexual harassment stuff that came in October this month. No, last month. No, it's still this month. Just. and we just did that for all of our retained clients. We updated all their handbooks. Yeah. We made sure they had a policy. We made sure that they were trained. Yeah. You know, and I think we'll more and more will partner with organisations to make sure that all of these different things that are coming through are already in their organisations, just like a good HR department would.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. Okay, and where can we find you online and on social media?
Sure. So, I mean, you can find us on, like, it's one-hr.co.uk. That's us. And you can find me on LinkedIn. And my colleague's called Dominic Nally. You can find her on LinkedIn or HR Ninjas or, you know, all of these different things. But, yeah, connect with me on LinkedIn. I'd love to continue the conversation.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hubbub, the Directors Hub podcast, sponsored by the Sussex Business Show.